Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. Ted Leo has been a core member of the Indian punk scene for a couple decades. The debut album of his band, Ted Leo and the Pharmacists, was released in 1999. And now Ted Leo joins us in studio, which means it's time for a special live music edition of Throwback Thursday Party like it's 1999. So
ladies and gentlemen, this is Mambo number 5.
Gentlemen, welcome to Fight Club.
That is not my recollection. My recollection is that I did not have sexual relations.
Oh, for you!
If you ask the question, where will the Y2K computer bug do serious damage, the answer is, no one really knows. Goodbye.
Ted Leo followed up that debut album with a few more records under the Pharmacist name, including 2003's Hearts of Oak, which helped the band gain exposure outside the DC punk scene and earned it a place among Pitchfork's 100 best albums of the decade. In its ranking, Pitchfork described the album as, quote, fierce, hyper-intelligent agitprop with combustibly catchy pop-punk hooks. The Pharmacist lineup has changed over time, and Leo has pursued other projects like The Both, his duo with Amy Mann, love her, and a sans Pharmacist album in 2017 that The Ringer reviewed as a welcome reminder of his greatness. But the band continues to tour 20 years later and will be performing August 24th at the White Eagle Hall in Jersey. But Ted Leo is in our studio right now, and you're going to perform a song from the early years?
I am, yeah.
What are we hearing?
By request. it's called Timorous Me. I'm going to warn you, because you're sitting in the studio with me, that the vocals are very loud, so just before it gets awkward in here.
I'm up for awkward.
Okay.
This kind of awkward anyway.
Excellent.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ted Leo. That's Ted Leo. First of all, that's a gorgeous guitar. Tell me about your guitar.
It's my last good guitar. It's an ES-335 Gibson. I had a few, and they've all deteriorated or been broken by airlines over the years.
So when you say it's your last good guitar, what's so good about it? I mean, it looks good, but...
Yeah, it's the right size for me. It's the right tone for me, you know.
What about the tone?
It can kind of be anything I want it to be. It's got a nice trebly top end, but it's also very easily moved into a more, you know, round, soulful guitar sound.
So when we think about when you think about when Ted Leo and the Pharmacists became a band, what year was it? What was going on with you? What made it that particular year or that particular situation that you guys were like, yeah, we're a band?
So I'd been in, you know, bands. I was here. I grew up around here and was in the New York punk scene in the 80s, and I'd been in bands since then. By the end of the 90s, I was living in D.C., and I had already, it seems crazy to say this now, given that it was only a little over a decade at that point, but I had already sort of burnt out on the whole thing. But I still had a lot of music. I had a lot of songs to play, so I started playing solo. And then I started writing songs that were better presented in a band context. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have a band. So the original Pharmacists were actually backing tracks that I recorded myself and put on a reel-to-reel tape machine that I used to lug around with me in the pre-iPod days. It was very dramatic to have this big reel-to-reel tape machine on stage with me. And then, you know, I missed my friends. I missed playing music with other people. And I started putting out albums that were more specifically band-oriented. And over the course of, or I should say pretty quickly, the band coalesced. And some of the people in it now I've been playing with, yeah, for the better part of 20 years.
So when you said when you burned out, did you burn out on the music industry? Did you burn out on touring? What was it that had just kind of taken you and made you fry a little bit?
All of the above.
Yeah.
I love traveling. I love touring. I was in a band who I'm still very good friends with these people. But at the time, I think, you know, we weren't, I feel like if you're making money, you can justify not having fun. If you're having a lot of fun, you can justify not making money, you know? We were doing neither, so it was, you know, it just seemed like it had run its course. And it was an era when a lot of punk and indie bands were experimenting with the major label world, and it was not really working out for most of them.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it just seemed like I was a little sick of the game, you know.
You had to fall in love with the music part again a little
bit.
Yeah,
I think that's right. I think that's right.
My guest is Ted Leo. Hearts of Oak, that was sort of the breakthrough. What was it about that album?
That's a good question. I mean, it was in the lead up to the Iraq War. We never shied away from addressing those things. I've never shied away from addressing politics and stuff in my songs. I think some of it maybe struck a chord with people because of that.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, I had gained enough mastery over what I wanted to do as a songwriter, and we as a band gained enough mastery to iterate it in the way that we'd been seeking to do for a number of years, which was a little bit of a return to primary influences, earlier 80s stuff, be it The Clash or The Jam or even like Thin Lizzy. The song I just played, in my brain when I was writing it, I was thinking, like, I'm going to write a punk Curtis Mayfield song with, like, an Irish flair to it. And, of course, what comes out is Thin Lizzy. You know, like,
right.
That's the formula, you know. So, I think we were just getting a little better at doing it. And I think we managed to do it at a moment in time where not a lot of other people were doing that sort of thing. And it took off a little bit.
You mentioned politics. I follow you on Twitter. You are, have a strong political voice and political opinions, as a lot of people do. When you're writing music, do you sit down and think, have something on your mind about politics or culture and you need to write to it? Or is it just part of who you are and it flows that way? I mean, is it intentional to write political songs, or is it just part of who you are so it comes out in your art?
I would say both. I mean, it would come out inevitably anyway. I do have to actually challenge myself sometimes to, like, buddy, write a love song, for crying out loud, you know, like, try it, you know. To quote another great punk band, Crass, when they were asked a question, you know, why don't you write love songs, their response was, what do you mean? Everything we do is love song. Everything we write is a love song. Our love of life is total. Everything that we dabble in politically is a love song, you know, for humanity. And so I try to not get too didactic. I try to actually write songs that, you know, can resonate with the listener however they will. But it does tend to just come out. That said, there are those times also when I feel I have an idea that I very much want to address and will, you know, back engineer that into a song.
My guest is Ted Leo. So with that in mind, your next song you're going to play is William Weld in the 21st Century, former Massachusetts governor, only person running against President Trump in the moment. So we'll listen to the song and then we'll talk about it on the other side. This is Ted Leo on All of It.
William Weld sees the 20th century fading away in the night. The curtain fell on this old noble venture. He waits in the lane for his flight. Doesn't bend as he walks down the jetway bag in hand. Don't pretend he won't need profound regret there when he lands. William felt he could save his country. He gave it away without a and they are bad.
let you down. They won't turn around. They'll always let you down. They won't turn around. They'll always let you down. No, they won't turn around.
That was Ted Leo singing William Weld in the 21st Century. When did you write that?
when did I write that? I wrote that, well, I wrote it in like spring of 2016, I think.
Do you know if he's heard the song?
I got an email from somebody who said, I'm a friend of Governor Weld's. What's this song about?
What did you say?
I didn't reply.
Oh, you didn't? Well,
no, I mean, the song is the song. He's a public figure and the lyrics are the lyrics. One is free to interpret them as one wishes.
For you, are the lyrics different or have different meaning now, 3 years later, from when you wrote it?
Well, the song is about a cluster of things. It's not really specifically even about William Weld in particular. He's the narrative touchstone, mm-hmm. if you will. and certainly, as time creeps on, certain things that it is about stick out more at different times to me, which influences my pre-playing that song speech every night that we play it.
What is sticking out right now? If you were going to play that song tonight?
Yeah. Right now in particular, as we're getting into, primary season, it sort of goes back to the origins of the song for me, which were about, frankly, like a certain class of wealthy white men being more than willing to overlook the intense pain that the coming administration was definitely going to cause to people unlike them, and treat all politics as if it were a game, and not being willing to stake any reputation or anything, and having the luxury of retreating, to one's ivied compound and not having to deal with what's happening in the streets.
That would be your feeling today as well?
That's my feeling today as well, yes.
My guest is Ted Leo. So your latest solo album, The Hanged Man, you crowdfunded.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like? Would you do it again?
It was great. It's been tough for me to complete it's 2 years gone now, and I'm still fulfilling premiums from the Kickstarter thing, which certain people are understandably not happy about. I would caution anyone who is going to do it to do a better job at mapping out what everything costs.
Interesting.
Before one jumps in. Would I do it again? Probably not, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I think I wouldn't have been able to do this album the way that I did it. I wouldn't have been able to make it a double album. I wouldn't have been able to get the artwork that I wanted for it. I wouldn't have been able to do it at all without the support of the people who did help me crowdfund it. So I'm glad I did it.
But you make a really interesting point that just, hey, donate and help me make an album. It's bigger and thicker and more complex than that.
Well, I think there are two kinds of projects like this. There are probably more than two, but two that come to mind are there are those for whom it's more of a pre-sale. The product is done, or the means to produce it are already there. And then for others, it's truly funding. For me, it was truly funding. And mm-hmm. So there were pieces of it, of the overall, pledge thing that it took over a year to just complete manufacturing on and things. all the while trying to be on tour and you know, manage both ends against the middle. A lot of it is a lot of it is the fact that I should never run a record label. Let's put it that way. Sometimes I think I'm very organized. I am stacked Virgo, and yet I'm better at playing the music than manufacturing it.
If a major record label said to you right now, we'd like to put out a record, do you think you'd be open to that? Is that an experience that you could go through?
It's tough to say. You know, the last time that this was a serious consideration for me, I won't say which label, but there was I was in an office, I think it was around Hearts of Oak, after Hearts of Oak came out, and the A&R person that I was talking to was telling me everything that I wanted to hear. You know, he was saying, we're not going to pump you for hits. We know you're not a radio hit person. Like, we want you to have a home. We want you to be like, you know, have like a Springsteen like home, you know, and I'm just like ding, 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 you know, checking all these boxes. And I did an interview with someone later that day, and that person actually said to me, you know, it's unbidden. Like, I hadn't told him about this. And he was like, it's really cool that you're not, you know, that you're sticking with independent labels. And I was like, all right, you know, like, I guess that's my answer, you know? And, I still consider that to be something of an important stance to take, but to be totally honest with you, the industry is so insane and wildly different right now that, you know, I think I would have a hard time stepping over that line. Let me put it that way. But I'm also not really in a position to not hear out offers.
You have a podcast, for anybody who doesn't know, and it's not necessarily a music-focused podcast. Right. I mean, you had two guests we've had on, Emily Nussbaum and Wyatt Cenac.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about what made you want to do the podcast and what you're getting out of it.
So the idea for the podcast, so that my co-host is Amy Mann.
From Till Tuesday.
As you mentioned,
awesome.
We also do music together. But the idea for the podcast goes back to a project that she did. She was invited to the White House for, I'm going to get this a little bit wrong, but it was a youth poetry forum. And she and the poet Billy Collins were speaking to a bunch of kids about how they write, how they work. And I think just having this conversation sparked this idea in her that it was something that we as a team could probably do well with people. So we try to talk to people from broadly defined across the, you know, creative spectrum to discuss how they work. You know, it's not necessarily just about the nuts and bolts, and that's often just a jumping off point for a larger conversation, but the point is not so much what inspires you, but when you're looking at a blank page, or, you know, what are your strategies for X, Y, and Z?
Have you learned anything during the course of the podcast that you've been able to use yourself, that you're like, oh, good strategy, good idea?
You know what I've learned is that editing a podcast is also, it's like a third job I'm not getting paid for. That's another one that I probably shouldn't do. But it's fun, and the conversations are great, and yeah, we get to talk to people like Wyatt and Emily Nussbaum and some musicians, comedians, etc.
The name of it is?
The name of it is The Art of Process.
The Art of Process. Ted Leo has been my guest. We're going to have to leave it there. He will be performing with The Pharmacist August 24th at the White Eagle Hall in New Jersey. Ted, thank you so much for coming in
for
performing.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure. Thank you.
There's more of all of it after a quick break.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.